Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday's elections tell a tale of anti-incumbent sentiment and voter motivation. Out is 30-year Senate veteran Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. In by a landslide over his mainline Republican rival in Kentucky is newcomer and Tea Partier Rand Paul. In Arkansas's primary, incumbent Democrat Blanche Lincoln forced into a runoff by a challenger from her left. It was a telling day, a fascinating day of voting with the whole country watching. This hour On Point, the message from voters in yesterday's big elections. You can join the conversation. What do you read in these returns? What's the heads up here for Republicans, Democrats, the Tea Party, President Barack Obama? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll hear from political strategists and campaign advisors reading the tea leaves and from you. But first, joining us from Philadelphia in Pennsylvania is Jonathan Martin, senior political writer for Politico.com. Jonathan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Greetings from the city of brotherly love.
The city of brotherly love, and not so much last night. Let's start right there. Specter and Sestak, give us the final result, at least as deep as we know it. And what do you make of it, Jonathan?
Well, Senator Specter, who is, by the way, a Philadelphian. He was the DA here back in the 60s. This is where he is sort of... had his political base for decades and
yes.
Was not feeling the love last night, statewide at least. It was really striking. This is somebody who is a sort of icon in this state, who's been in the Senate since 1980, and he really campaigned on the fact that he had brought home the bacon. He was somebody that had delivered for this state. This state needed him in Washington. And I'll tell you, as we saw in Utah when Senator Bob Bennett lost his reelection, that appeal of seniority, of clout, that politicians for decades now have been leaning on, just does not seem to have resonance this year. And I think that's in large part because voters are angry at the political establishment, and that they don't want to be reminded of the fact that you, the incumbent, are an insider. So I think that is a large reason why Specter lost. The other chief reason, of course, is the fact that Democrats here have been voting against him for a long time. He was a former Republican, and if you're a loyal Democrat in this state, you finally had your chance to, kick him out of office. The fact that he had a D after his name now instead of an R didn't change the minds of a lot of folks here, regardless of what the governor said and regardless of what the president said, both of whom were for Specter.
I know the White House supported him. Barack Obama didn't come in the last days, but he was there for Arlen Specter, and so did the Democratic establishment in Pennsylvania. But really, Jonathan, I mean, I know it's a big old tree falling in the forest, but here's an 80-year-old senator who's flipped from Republican, long-term Republican, to Democrat. I mean, is there really a big message in that? It doesn't look like the strongest position to be in.
Well, he was obviously in a weakened position because of the fact that he had changed his party, because of the fact that he was sort of the ultimate insider, the ultimate incumbent, the ultimate Paul in a year that would not favor those designations. But I think there's a larger message here. This era of when a Barack Obama or an Ed Rendell, popular president, popular governor with their party, can somehow give that golden nod to a candidate, and that is going to really drive votes. I just really think we're now in a time when voters make up their minds individually, and it's not a slight to Obama, and it's not a slight to Rendell, but they're going to decide, thank you very much, who they want to vote for. Just because a party boss or even a president says vote for this guy doesn't mean they're going to.
Jonathan, take us to Kentucky and the big Tea Party guy Rand Paul victory over mainline Republican establishment candidate Trey Grayson. Do we know what the margin was in the end?
It was 20 points. It was not even close. And again, this is a state where you had a candidate in Trey Grayson, the establishment favorite, who was supported by Mitch McConnell, not just the GOP leader of the Senate, mm-hmm. but the political godfather of the GOP in Kentucky. Voters said, we respect Senator McConnell. Thank you very much. We're going to vote for our preferred candidate. And that's Rand Paul, who has tapped into this Tea Party fervor that is taking hold of the conservative grassroots, the anti-Washington, anti-spending, outsider sort of fervor. And I think that's why he was so strong last night. But further, I think Grayson ran a pretty poor campaign and misread the electorate. And so Paul, really, really benefited from having a consistent message of, I'm an outsider, I'm going to go after Washington, I'm going to take on the spending there that has been excessive in both parties. And again, we saw it with the Democrats in Pennsylvania, and we saw it with Republicans in Kentucky. Voters are just not moved by the appeals of party leaders at this point.
Jonathan, take us right on west to Arkansas and Democrat Blanche Lincoln in the Democratic primary there. She hung on, but it wasn't the outcome she wanted.
I was surprised by how close that was. I think the conventional wisdom was that she was going to win, but be a heck of a lot closer to getting 50%, which is not, and the race was pretty darn close. Again, this is somebody that a two-term senator, a card-carrying member of the political establishment, somebody who was bragging about her status as chairman of the Agriculture Committee in the Senate, and guess what? Those things just don't resound much for voters in this kind of a political environment. She may have a tough time in the run. She can halter, but in many ways, we'll go to a June runoff. And given the sort of political mood out there, a head-to-head race featuring an incumbent could be very, very tough for Senator Lincoln.
So she'll be up against Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter there, who had so many left-leaning groups supporting him against the mainstream Democrat in that case, in Blanche Lincoln.
Pretty remarkable.
Jonathan, we're losing your cell phone, but we're really glad to have had you this morning. Thanks for joining us from Philadelphia. We'll have to loop back around to Pennsylvania's 12th District and look in there. Very interesting result there as well. In Philadelphia, or in Pennsylvania last night, in his acceptance speech at Valley Forge Military Academy, Wayne, Pennsylvania, here was Congressman Joe Sestak gunning for the Senate now, rallying the audience by declaring his victory over Arlen Specter a victory over the Washington establishment.
This is what democracy looks like. A win for the people. Over the establishment, over the status quo, even over Washington, D.C.
Take that, White House and Ed Rendell, and for that matter, Arlen Specter, on his way out after 30 years. And in Kentucky, Tea Party-backed candidate Rand Paul, son of Texas Representative Ron Paul, defeated the Secretary of State, Trey Grayson, who had been backed by so much of the Republican establishment there. Here's Rand Paul speaking to his supporters last night.
I have a message from the Tea Party, a message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our government back.
A message from the Tea Party. With us now from Sagamore Beach, Massachusetts, is Bob Schrum. He's a Democratic strategist and professor at New York University. He's worked over the years for Ted Kennedy, as a senior advisor to Al Gore in the 2000 presidential campaign, as senior advisor to the Kerry Edwards campaign in 2004. He's author of No Excuses, Confessions of a Serial Campaigner. Bob Schrum, welcome back to On Point.
Glad to be here, Tom.
It's great to have you. And with us from New York is Republican pollster and strategist Kellyanne Conway. She's president and CEO of The Polling Company, has worked with GOP figures from Jack Kemp and former Vice President Dan Quayle to Newt Gingrich. She's co-author of What Women Really Want, How American Women Are Quietly Erasing Political, Racial, Class, and Religious Lines to Change the Way We Live. Kellyanne Conway, nice to have you back as well.
It's a pleasure, Tom. Nice to be with Bob and you.
Kellyanne, first to you. What big lessons are you going to take from this round of voting yesterday?
Well, it's not really an anti-incumbent year so much as an anti-establishment year. I think most the hefty number of incumbents seeking re-election will be re-elected this year, but not if they're stuck defending votes that people find controversial. I think what's different this year in this cycle is that you've got more people who have digital penetration who are getting their news about political figures and public policy issues almost ubiquitously through a number of different sources. They don't need to wait for their local papers to endorse someone. They don't need to get their their walking and talking orders from the leader of their party or their state or the president himself. They really are independently minded, even if they don't call themselves independents. I also think that the attempted marginalization of Tea Party-minded individuals, just these good citizens who have actually had it with the encroachment of government and using the Constitution of the United States like a paper towel rather than respecting it for the document it is, I think that they are the attempted marginalization of those folks has failed. And remember, Rand Paul certainly had the support of the Tea Party movement. Yes, he's libertarian, but he ran as a Republican, and he ran as a fiscally conservative Republican. Those are the types who are going to win this year. But I'll tell you, if you're someone like Blanche Lincoln who has to go home and defend to the left why you spoke out against the public option for health care and defend to the right the fact that you voted for TARP, she's going to have three consecutive tough elections. Last night, the lesson that I learned is that fiscal conservatism is still the best agenda item going into the fall elections. Even Mark Kritz, who won the seat of his old boss, the departed
John Murtha,
that's right. He ran as a pro-life, pro-gun, pro-fiscal responsibility, non-Pelosi, non-Obama Democrat. He said he would have voted against Obamacare.
But of course, he was a Democrat in the end, and the district Republicans really wanted to win. We're going to dive into the details, but Bob Schrum, bottom line, if you can get to a bottom line in this welter of results, better for Democrats or better for Republicans as to the midterms?
First, I have to say my friend Kellyanne is spinning like a top. The fact is Republicans should have won that district. It voted for John Kerry in 2004, but it voted pretty clearly for John McCain in 2008. It's the kind of district where the dissatisfaction is supposed to be very high. And by the way, there has never been a Democrat in that district who was not pro-gun and pro-choice. That is the part of Pennsylvania where you have pro-gun Democrats, anti-choice Democrats. That's the kind of politics they have there.
John Murtha country. Bottom line, who wins last night, Bob?
Well, I thought it was good for the Democrats last night because Sestak has a much better chance to win. I think he will win. There is now a chance to win that Kentucky Senate seat, which there was not before because the Tea Party feels strongly, but I think it's going to be tough to elect a guy who associates with 9/11 deniers.
Bob, hold the thought right there, if you would, Bob. We have to take a short break. Kellyanne Conway, Bob Schrum, we're looking at election results. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking to Sarah about yesterday's primaries and a special election and what they mean for the midterms, what they say about American voters now and where they're looking. Kellyanne Conway is with us, Republican pollster and strategist, joining us from New York. And Bob Schrum is here, Democratic strategist, been advisor to all kinds of Democratic presidential candidates, and you name it, author of No Excuses. And let's go straight to our listeners, John in Amherst, New York. John, you're on.
Oh, hi, folks, everyone. Thank you. Kellyanne, thank you for fighting the good fight. I do appreciate it. Listen, I don't know how this can be viewed as anything but a triumph for conservatism. Barack Obama actually campaigned for Arlen Specter, and he by all accounts got trounced. And if you look at what happened with, am I here?
You're here. You're on, John.
Oh no, I just didn't know. Thank you. Oh, let me talk. I appreciate it. Also, if you look at the congressional seat in Pennsylvania, you couldn't tell who was a Republican because they were railing against Barack Obama in Washington. Now, this is not only a conservative movement. This is a completely anti-Barack Obama movement, and I'm not saying that as anything but people are just very, very uncomfortable with what is going on. You cannot take any solace in the fact that a pro-life Democrat who rallied against him in his campaign, they can take no solace in anything that happened. And if you look at the fact
that Pennsylvania's 12th, let us look at that one, John. Thanks for your call. Let's hear a little bit more from the Democrat who won in John Murtha's old seat. He had for 30-plus years up against a very well-financed and deeply supported by the Republican establishment guy, Tim Burns. Kritz won. The Democrat took it. And, of course, everybody was looking at this as a bellwether for whether Republicans can take the House this fall. We went to Johnstown in the district just last week and talked to Mark Kritz and the supporters of Tim Burns. Here was the Democrat, Mark Kritz, last night, acknowledging his supporters from across party lines.
Tonight, the voters of this district rejected the false attacks and partisan divisions. Instead, they came together as Democrats, as Republicans, as independents, as liberals, as conservatives, to support our fight for jobs. They came together as Pennsylvanians to support our campaign, to end tax breaks for companies that outsource their jobs, to replace unfair trade deals with a better deal for Pennsylvania's workers.
Bob Schrum, what do you say to our caller who looks at Pennsylvania's 12th and, in spite of the Democratic victory, says it was a triumph for conservatism last night and an anti-Barack Obama day?
Well, if you listen to what Mark Kritz just said, that's not a Republican agenda. That's, in fact, probably a substantially more progressive Democratic agenda on economic issues than the president has advanced. Look, it's just completely untrue that Mark Kritz campaigned against Barack Obama. He allowed that he probably would have voted against the health care bill because he was under pressure at the beginning of the race and was behind. But the truth is that district is a conservative Democratic district. It always has been. John Murtha had, I actually was born in the next congressional district over. John Murtha has had a lot of freedom to vote however he wanted over the years because he became an institution in that district. But, you know, Bob Casey, Senator Bob Casey, is pro-gun. He's also pro-life. That's the kind of Democrat you sometimes get from Pennsylvania. And Bob Casey campaigned for Barack Obama. Look, the Democrats are very happy about that congressional district last night. I talked to a lot of people a couple of weeks ago who thought we were going to lose it and that it was going to be a trendsetter. I think it sets a trend in the opposite direction.
Kellyanne, what about it? I mean, you point out the ways in which Obama was not exactly embraced. On the other hand, this is a district where Republicans had put a lot of hopes as a kind of bellwether, saying on to a House majority this fall. Economically in trouble, populist, culturally traditional, and yet Tim Burns couldn't quite get it over the hump there, Kellyanne.
Well, Kritz is going to have to defend the seat again in less than 6 months, so we'll see how that happens, because I think that the turnout among Democrats is expected to be very poor, especially when compared to 2008 and even 2006, the last congressional presidential election that we had, non-presidential election that we had, where Republicans like me all year in 2006 were admitting early. Not many of us, but me certainly, that it was going to be a poor Republican year because they had not just, they were not just going to lose the majority, but they were going to lose their way. They had become the big government, big spending party, and it cost them. And I think the same will be true here. And if we're going to spend a whole hour talking about one congressional district, I think it tells us exactly what happened last night, that outside of that Democratic victory, it was a very, very bad night.
No, actually, I'm happy, Kellyanne. Let's not play games here. I'm happy to talk about the other races.
We certainly will. We certainly will.
A much stronger general election candidate. And in Kentucky, Democratic turnout was higher than Republican turnout, and both Democrats got more votes than the Tea Party candidate who won the Republican nomination.
Let's listen to that Tea Party candidate and his victory speech last night, how he talked about the Tea Party or Republicans. Here's Rand Paul criticizing Republicans in Washington, Republicans, for not reining in spending.
So many Republicans have been elected and they say, we'll cut your taxes, but then we'll bring you home the pork. It's coming to an end because we can't manage this debt. The debt of nearly $2 trillion has interest of $383 billion. One of the largest items in our budget now is the interest on the debt. This cannot go on forever. We're reaching a crisis point.
Kellyanne Conway, debt is a tough issue for both parties, but I'm really curious, how do Republicans now, or conservatives, ride these two horses? You've got Rand Paul trouncing Trey Grayson, who Mitch McConnell was very solidly behind, criticizing Republicans in his acceptance speech, and yet he's a Republican candidate. How do Republicans deal with these two channels going at once?
I think everyone's got to run the campaign they feel most comfortable running and not sound like a hypocrite to their own voters. You're going to have Republicans of different gradations when it comes to positions on issues. But I can tell you, those who are most purely conservatively economic, who can straight-facedly say, I either did or I would have had I been there, voted against Obamacare, voted against the stimulus, which has not created anything except a 10% unemployment rate, even higher among men in this country since we're in the middle of a man session. And they could say, I would vote against the next TARP and the next bailout, whether it be Greece or the car companies again or my neighbor's mortgage or Wall Street. And anybody who can stand up and say that, you know, one of the most curious polling statistics I've seen recently is in the 20 or so years since Gallup has been asking the question, for the first time ever, the number one concern that people feel that will be most pressing 20 years from now is the federal budget deficit. It used to be the environment. It was the economy. It was Social Security for a while.
But, Killian, let me just take you to this core point. Does the Tea Party success in Rand Paul, is this a sign of something that helps the GOP or tears it apart?
It is. You guys can try all you want.
What do you mean, you guys? It's Mitch McConnell. He's the Republican Senate leader, and he was behind Paul's opponent. I'm talking to you about Republicans.
But you need to invite a different Republican strategist on if you want somebody to come on and defend the Republican establishment. I mean, I support Marco Rubio. I don't support Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire. I support Ovid Momentan. I thought it was great that Senator Bennett got his comeuppance in Utah after he supported TARP and tried to talk about it. So it's the wrong person. I supported Rand Paul. I think anybody who's got the – I started out this entire broadcast saying it's an anti-establishment year. That goes for both parties. And the number one problem in the Republican Party for ages has been these three ridiculous, poisonous words, he can win or he can't win. They pick winners and losers long before voters have a chance to sort it out for themselves. And that's the comeuppance that's happening right now. When you get people to endorse, whether they're the Senate Majority Leader, the President of the United States, the Governor of Pennsylvania, that voters have a different thing in mind. They really don't care who you like. They want to see what the positions on the issues are. So I think it's an anti-establishment year more than anything.
Bob Schrum, the GOP's riding two horses here. Is that a strength or a weakness?
Well, first, I want to endorse every single one of the candidates Kelly favors for the Republican nomination. Her candidate in New Hampshire will lose the seat. Rand Paul has a good chance in Kentucky to lose that seat. Trey Grayson would have won that seat hands down. So I'm not normally in the position of defending Mitch McConnell, but I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get electable candidates. Secondly, let's not distort the facts here. Just to throw out the talking point, the stimulus hasn't created a single job is completely false by almost every single neutral observer and economist. When Barack Obama took office, George Bush left us a legacy of losing 700,000 to 800,000 jobs a month. We are now creating 250,000 to 300,000 jobs a month. Now, I'm not claiming that's going to get Democrats a big victory this fall. I think we're in a race between the reality of economic recovery, which is now taking hold, and the perception people have that their jobs are insecure.
Bob,
I don't know how fast one will catch up with the other.
I want to try to get to what we see coming right out of the elections yesterday, and Republicans with the Tea Party kind of sidecar, or maybe it's become the main engine now.
No, it's
strength
engine,
or weakness? Is that
it's
a strength or not?
Well, it's certainly motivating their base, but as I said earlier, I think somebody who thinks a nuclear-armed Iran is not a danger to the U.S., which Rand Paul has said, somebody who associates with 9/11 deniers and thinks maybe there was a legitimate reason for us to be attacked is a vulnerable general election candidate.
Let's go to Peter in Buffalo, New York. Peter, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. You're on.
I have a hypothetical for your panel.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose several Senate seats were won by Tea Party candidates. Would you see traditional Republicans and Democrats working in a suddenly bipartisan way to maintain the current status quo, despite the Tea Party's efforts to take back the government?
You mean the GOP and the Democrats allying against the Tea Party?
Yeah, those people that they've elected as Republicans, the gentleman from Massachusetts comes to mind.
Scott Brown. Let me ask Kellyanne about it. Kellyanne, what about it? Are mainstream, mainline party members going to be that upset by the Tea Party that they joined GOP and Dems?
I don't think so. We haven't seen that yet. If anything, you saw Scott Brown be able to put together an alliance of all disparate types of Republicans to decisively beat Martha Coakley up there, and very few people saw that coming. I think it's also everything we're talking about has to really be connected to turnout. The people that you saw come out in droves in 2008 did not come out in 2009 and the beginning of 2010 for Brown in Massachusetts, for McDonnell, and for Christie in Virginia and New Jersey, respectively. Those three states combined showed Barack Obama winning by 54 points combined and trouncing John McCain and Sarah Palin among independents. And quite the reverse is true already. So I think you're just going to have a very different electorate. And so far, all signs point to the energy level, the enthusiasm level, going towards those who are voting Republican, whether they also call themselves conservatives, moderates, Tea Partiers. I love the fact that I actually represent the party that's got more ideological diversity now than not.
Diversity or a chasm, depending how you look at it. Maybe a strength, maybe not. I want to look some more at this race in Pennsylvania. Arlen Specter, of course, longtime Republican, turned Democrat, helped President Obama get that 60-vote majority to get busy last year, taken down by Representative Joe Sestak. Here he is. This is the TV ad that everybody says kind of really helped turn the result in the end. This is an ad that ran during the campaign that highlighted the fact that Arlen Specter had switched parties from Republican to Democrat.
I'm Joe Sestak, the Democrat. I authorize this message.
My change in party will enable me to be reelected.
For 45 years, Arlen Specter has been a Republican politician.
Arlen Specter is the right man for the United States Senate. I can count on this man. See, that's important. He's a firm ally.
But now,
my change in party will enable me to be reelected.
Arlen Specter switched parties to save one job. His, not yours.
Arlen Specter, sounds like Eeyore there, Bob Shrum. But what do you make of the whole dynamic?
It was a brilliant ad. Specter thought he had a great hole card in the endorsement of the president. It turned out he had another presidential endorsement from George W. Bush, which hurt him tremendously in a Democratic primary. I think that Specter didn't run a campaign that gave people any sense that he really, until the very end, when he started talking about jobs a lot, that he really understood what they were going through. There were not a lot of Democrats in the rain yesterday yearning to go out and vote for him. And Joe Sestak ran a remarkable campaign. He said, I had started to run before he switched. I'm going to continue to run. And he carried that through, stood up for health care, stood up on the jobs bill, and emerged, by the way, as almost every Democrat in the state figured out, as a much stronger general election candidate against Pat Toomey.
Who's the better vote for President Obama if it were Specter or Sestak here? We'll talk about Toomey, but between those two.
I don't think it makes much difference. I think Specter was critical to passing the stimulus. He was critical to passing health care. I think you ought to welcome converts. But at some level, the voters decided his day was done, and they wanted what they thought of as a real Democrat. I have no doubt that Sestak will be a very strong vote for the president's program.
Let's go to Gary in Concord, Massachusetts. Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to suggest that storyline that this is an anti-incumbent fever, the results of the primary, mm-hmm. it seems to me a bit of media hype. That what I see happening is that it seems to me there's a hardening of ideological lines, and not so much even about Democrat or Republican, but it's about liberal and conservative. And so I would say that in Pennsylvania, for instance, it's about who is the real Democrat, who is the real liberal. And I think that you could also extend that to the race in Kentucky with the Tea Party candidate and then even into Arkansas, and suggest that Lincoln had trouble winning there because it was a question of her sort of purity and her commitment to the Obama
on health care and all the rest. Gary, you're a good observer. Let us pick that up, because on the other hand, you got Pennsylvania's 12th, where the Democrat who won was not exactly ideologically pure. But what about it, Kellyanne? Do you see ideological lines hardening in these results?
A little bit, although I have to say most of what the primary voters have on their mind these years and in this Brown special election are people's actual votes and positions. If you go back and you look at the exit polling, you look at the post-election polling, you look at the polling that preceded some of these races from last night, the average voter who's engaged and actually taken it to the ballot box is a real financial sophisticate this year. There's somebody who understands these votes and the consequences of these votes, whether it's health care, again, the stimulus, TARP, you can't say it enough. The 2010 is a mostly economic election, and the economic election really has got to go beyond hope and change. Those are monosyllabic runs that are effective if you are a good salesman and you don't have much of a record to run on. However, after you've been governing and you have presided over this kind of legislation and your foot soldiers have been voting for this legislation, that's exactly who is being turned out. I think that the only thing I would say is the Specter race is very particularized to Arlen Specter. People really have a nose for hypocrisy in politics, whether it's Richard Blumenthal lying about his service in Vietnam or Arlen Specter believing that he's just so absolutely essential to the body politic of Pennsylvania that he must switch parties to keep that seat, as he famously said, inside the Beltway.
Or somebody preaching abstinence and having an affair. We'll look at it all. Kellyanne Conway, please stand by. And Bob Schrum, we're talking about yesterday's primaries and special election and what the results mean for the midterms for American politics ahead. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about yesterday's primaries and special election and what they mean for the midterms, what they say about American voters. Now Bob Schrum is with us. Democratic strategist joins us today from Sagamore Beach, Massachusetts. And Kellyanne Conway is here, Republican pollster and strategist, joins us from New York. Our own Jack Beatty joins us in just a moment. Pennsylvania's 12th was John Murtha's seat, Democrat. Conservative country, though. And Republicans were looking to make a big gain there. Didn't quite get it. But the Republican candidate, Tim Burns, came out in his concession speech saying he's still optimistic about the future of the conservative movement. Here he is, saying that that movement is alive and well in America.
I am more convinced than ever that this year, because of what I've seen here in this race, because the effort that I've seen here in this race, I am more convinced than ever that this year we will begin to take the steps necessary to turn this country around.
Tim Burns says they'll do it, but he didn't do it last night. And a little bit more here from Joe Sestak, who took it over Arlen Specter for the Senate race in Pennsylvania.
It's time. It's just time for a new generation of leadership that we can count on to leave behind politics as usual. And to remember about working families of Pennsylvania right here. And to even stand up to one's own party when that party doesn't get it right for us.
Even stand up to one's own party, and that sounds like a formula working on both sides of the aisle yesterday. Steve in Nashville. Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My take on this whole thing is that it was a true victory for conservatives. If you look at what's going on in the political landscape right now, a liberal candidate or a liberal person, liberal voter, if you will, is only going to vote for a Democrat. I don't see a liberal reaching across party lines to vote for a Republican candidate. However, a conservative candidate will reach across party lines and vote for a Democrat. I use my state of Tennessee as a prime example. Tennessee is a more conservative state. However, we have probably one of the most popular governors around. I don't know of any state that feels as strongly about their governor, especially right now in this landscape, as we do about Phil Bredesen. As a matter of fact, I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I would vote for Phil Bredesen tomorrow for president over anybody that the Republicans have put forth, or certainly President Obama, and I think he'd make an excellent candidate.
So you see a conservative advantage in that liberal conservative Democrats might go GOP, but no GOP is going to go the other way. On Point News analyst Jack Beatty joins us right now. Jack, what do you think of the results last night? What do you think of our caller's observation?
Well, we've had Governor Bredesen on our show, mm-hmm. and his
very state, well spoken.
Very well spoken. The state won the award, one of the awards for the Challenge Grant on education.
Yep.
So very impressive indeed. And he's right. I mean, he's describing essentially the political profile of the Blue Dog Democrat, the Democrat who will vote for a conservative Democrat, but on the other hand, if that is not on offer, will vote for a Republican. And I think there probably is more flexibility there for Republicans on that side. On the other hand, I mean, I don't know what our other guests have said. I'm sure they've added, they've talked it through. But, you know, if the Republicans didn't take the Pennsylvania 12th with all the factors going into it, that's not encouraging. You know, that means there are residual forces out there on the Democratic side, local candidates who can localize these races have a chance of holding on.
Bottom line for you, Jack, looking at all the results yesterday, were the Republicans' odds of taking the House this fall bolstered? Did they look sunnier, shinier this morning or not?
I would say a little dimmer, just on the basis of the Pennsylvania return. It's harder to nationalize House races. All politics is local, especially at the House level. And if Democrats follow the Critz model of localizing the race. Look at all the things I've done for the district. Yes, it's been earmarks, but after all, it puts people to work. They may have found a way to hold on, meaning keep their losses down to the historic average of about 26 seats.
We haven't talked much about Arkansas and Democratic Senator Blanche Lincoln there. She narrowly won the popular vote over challenger. This is in the Democratic primaries, Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter. But because neither received 50% of the vote, they will face off again in a June 8th runoff election. In her speech last night, here's Blanche Lincoln talking about the importance of her vote in Washington.
I have one vote in the United States Senate, and I treat it as if it were your vote, and that's the important thing. Right. You elected me to be your voice, and I have tried to do that. It is safe to say that the D.C. unions are unhappy with me because I don't agree with them all of the time. The Wall Street banks are unhappy with me because I'm fighting to make them stop making those risky trades that happen in the dark of the night.
Yeah.
Together, folks, we can get this economy moving again. We know how as Arkansans. It takes hard work. It takes honest decision-making. And that's exactly what we are about.
Blanche Lincoln last night. Jack Beatty, Kellyanne Conway, and Bob Schrum are with me. Bob, what do you make of the outcome in Arkansas?
Perilous for Blanche Lincoln. And if we can be nonpartisan and analytical about this, she has three problems. The first is that having been forced into a runoff, history would tend to indicate that she would lose that runoff. There's a very interesting statistic in the NBC First Read this morning, which predicts that a lot of the votes for the other candidate, who's actually rather conservative, if only 60% of them go to Halter, he wins the runoff. And I think that's one thing. The second thing is, as you listen to that speech, she's trying to triangulate. She's trying to appeal both left and right, and in the process, mm-hmm. I think she's alienating both conservatives and liberals. And the third thing is that she somehow or other seems to have lost her connection with the voters of Arkansas. It is extraordinary. She doesn't have Specter's problems. She's not a party switcher. But in a state that's relatively conservative, that where Democrats are relatively conservative, that has a lot of blue dogs, somehow or other she lost that connection. And I think when you lose that connection, it's very hard to get it back.
Jack Beatty, we've pressed Kellyanne Conway on what it means for Republicans to have to try and ride maybe two horses here. The Tea Party, which Rand Paul rode so successfully yesterday, then the mainline Republican, which they're not exactly merged here yet. What about Democrats? They're, in a way, does this Lincoln race say there are two horses there, too? Are you going to try and be centrist, reach across the line, do the blue dog dance, or, you know, lean toward your more liberal base?
I mean, it's a dilemma, and I think that the president, crucial there is the president's popularity. Where he has popularity, I think the Democrat can run with his national party. But in states where the president is beneath 50%, and there are a lot of those,
a lot,
that's going to be a tougher race. And over everything hangs the economy. According to Gallup, the underemployment rate is 19%. That's a lot of frustrated Americans. And evidence from Europe now, a recent study shows that in periods of slow growth or recessionary economies, parties on the right do better. And that dynamic, it seems to me, just is working overwhelmingly for the Republicans.
Kellyanne Conway, what about the Democrats and the stretch that they've got to do as they head into the fall campaign?
Well, Democrats prospered best in a year like 2006 when they actually went out and recruited some of these more conservative Democrats to run in more conservative districts, if not states. And now you've got Obama, Pelosi, and Reid in charge of a party. That just simply, where the grassroots, the rank and file, especially in the non-presidential year, are not going to buy it. And they're not. And you know, it's funny to me how few people who supported Barack Obama and who wanted him to be the subject and the predicate of every sentence they vomited for about a year and a half, now nobody really talks about him. And I think that's because a lot of these races should be laid at his feet, including the Specter race, certainly New Jersey, Virginia, Massachusetts, some of these other races. Hawaii, I mean, who would have thought that DCCC would pull out of Hawaii because they've got a split there between their liberal and moderate wings. They could not clear the field for one candidate or the other, and the Republicans have a good chance of picking up an open Democratic seat in Hawaii. Today's Pew Research Center
has a poll saying that 39% of adults believe Obama is doing an excellent or good job as president. 58% believe he's doing fair or poor. This is the reverse of what this man got 18 months ago. And anybody who says he's not on the ballot and it's not about him, every race is separate, is not paying attention to the fact that his agenda has forced a lot of these disparate Democrats, ideologically disparate Democrats, to cast a vote on one side or the other, one side or the other, on limited government or expanded government.
Let us pick it up. Jack, what about Obama's role in the Arlen Specter, Joe Sestak race? I mean, Specter came over, helped him get his agenda through. He could hardly deny him his support. On the other hand, his support didn't swing the day for our 80-year-old flipper.
No, and there's resentment in the Specter camp about it. There were open complaints even yesterday afternoon. Why didn't the president do more? I think there was one big fundraiser. There was a TV ad. There were robocalls. But, for example, Joe Biden was in Philadelphia on Sunday for a graduation and did not participate in any Specter activities. And it looked as if the White House was giving up on him. And they didn't want a repetition of the Scott Brown fiasco, where the president dashed up to Massachusetts, hung his star on Martha Coakley, only to see her lose and his own prestige diminish.
Bob, what do you think yesterday's results say about the president, his influence, his own prospects for himself and his agenda?
Look, the president and the White House made a decision that was quite different from the Massachusetts case, that they could certainly live with Joe Sestak as the Democratic nominee. I think they saw the likely margin that was coming, knew that Barack Obama couldn't affect it, and chose not to go there. I think it's a cold decision in some ways, but I think it was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I think what Jack said earlier is correct, which is this election is going to be driven by economics. It's not going to be driven by the kind of anger that's reflected when Kelly says there are all sorts of people who want to vomit the word Obama. I wish we could get that kind of stuff out of our political rhetoric.
I do too, frankly, but okay, yeah.
But I think what's going to happen here is Democrats are going to have a hard time in November if people don't begin to sense and feel the economic recovery, which there's no denying it's happening. Everyone on Wall Street agrees with it. Everyone in the Academy agrees with it. All the economists agree with it. But it has to be felt in the lives of ordinary people. Longer term, I think you're going to see the president's arc be very much like Ronald Reagan's. In 1982, Reagan bottomed out at 35% approval with a much smaller number of seats in the House, lost 26 seats. Democrats, and I remember this because I was there, were salivating to run against him in early 1983. And as the economy recovered, as jobs were created, he went on to win 49 states. I don't say Obama's going to win 49 states, but I actually don't have much doubt he's going to be reelected.
Let's go to Ann in Rumford, Rhode Island. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling to say that I think the reason that the elections turned out the way they turned out for Democrats is because Democrats come in all flavors. We're not just vanilla. And we don't expect our elected representatives to walk in lockstep. We don't throw them out of the party because they don't walk in lockstep. And that's what happens in the Republican Party. As you can see right now, we have all of the Republicans aren't willing to reach over the aisles. They're just ready to say no, 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 no.
But they come in different flavors now, Ann. I mean, two just went nose to nose in Kentucky, and one flavor pretty well trounced the other. Kellyanne, are you going to have more flavors in the GOP now? You sort of Tea Party flavored and mainline flavored, or is the whole party going to sort of fill the Tea Party cup now?
No, the whole party will not fill the Tea Party cup. But you said it right 40 minutes ago when you were asking originally about this contest between a Tea Party endorsed fiscal conservative versus the establishment backed Terry Grayson, and that's exactly correct. So I think that the strength of either party is in its ideological diversity and its acceptance of people from different viewpoints. Now, I see less of that within the leadership of the Democratic Party, which is my original point, that if you've got someone like Senator Lincoln in Arkansas, who is pretty much always voted as a more conservative Democrat, perhaps, than average, but that she and her colleagues are being led by Nancy Pelosi, represents San Francisco, or Harry Reid, who's brought a lot of the agenda leftward, and Barack Obama at the top, and I think it does cause problems. But this is exactly why you had a lot of you have a lot of Republican elected officials getting involved in these primaries this time. In years past, they sat it out, and I don't pretend that their endorsements helped or hurt one way or the other so much as to say people are putting down ideological markers based on votes on these economic issues.
But what was Mitch McConnell thinking? I'm just really curious. He must have seen the polling numbers, and yet he threw himself very strongly behind Trey Grayson. In a way, he made this a referendum on himself, and if it was that, he lost it pretty resoundingly. Is he, you know, everybody's got their difficulties here, both parties, but what about the parties of the Republican leadership looking out on this landscape, Kellyanne?
Yes, and I've said that the establishment of the Republican Party really does like to sort of choose winners early, and it's usually based on their perception of one's viability and, a quote, electability, which, again, the voters have the final say on that. In fact, the voters have the only say.
What about Mitch McConnell's viability, then, now?
Well, and there's a name that none of us have mentioned. I didn't hear any pundit mention last night either, which is really important to this Kentucky race, and his name is Jim Bunning. Mm-hmm. It's that outgoing senator's seat, and he had endorsed Rand Paul, and Jim Bunning was treated very poorly
yes.
by the political establishment. They pretty much just kicked him out, told him that he would not have the backing, the resources, et cetera. And Rand Paul sort of ran in his likeness. And I think that's a little bit of the untold story among the primary electorate on the Republican side in Kentucky, that they were basically saying there are parts of the Jim Bunning legacy that we would like to continue here.
Kellyanne, I've only got half a minute left. What's your number for the fall midterms at this point? Do you think the GOP can pick up that 40 seats in a majority in the House or not on the basis of what you saw yesterday?
I think it's getting more and more likely. I actually believe the House races can be more nationalized than the Senate races, and if there's a referendum on spending and the economy, perhaps. But you cannot underestimate the fact that both parties are doing a fairly good job of recruiting solid candidates in most of these races. I have to say that even if they're not recruiting people, people are just sort of organically appearing and saying, I can't sit on the sidelines anymore. The Democrats will have the money advantage. I think the Republicans will have the energy and turnout advantage.
But people getting in the game. Kellyanne Conway with the polling company joining us from New York. Thank you very much. And Bob Schramm, what's your number looking ahead to the fall?
I think it's hard to know. I think it's getting less likely that Democrats will lose the House because I think the economy is getting better. The president's approval ratings have ticked up. The latest AP poll shows Democrats actually regaining an edge in the generic vote for Congress. I agree with what Jack said earlier. It all depends on the economy and how soon the perception hits people that actually things are getting better and their lives are going to get better.
Bob Schramm, author of No Excuses, Concessions of a Serial Campaigner. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, how are you? Where's your finger in the wind on the fall elections after last night's results?
I think this enthusiasm gap for the Republicans is a big problem for the Democrats. Republicans want to vote in the fall much more than Democrats. That still holds true.
It's going to be an interesting set of months here. Jack, thanks for joining us, and listeners, thank you as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.